Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 12, text 1. There's a little bit of an introduction here, so I'll read that first and then we can do the verse. Chapter 12 is entitled Vritrasura's Glorious Death. This chapter describes how Indra, the king of heaven, killed Vritrasura despite great reluctance. After Vritrasura finished speaking, he released his trident against King Indra with great anger. But Indra, using his thunderbolt, which was many times more powerful than the trident, broke the trident to pieces and cut off one of Vritrasura's arms. Nevertheless, Vritrasura used his remaining arm to strike Indra with an iron mace, making the thunderbolt fall from Indra's hand. Indra, being very ashamed of this, did not pick up the thunderbolt from the ground, but Vritrasura encouraged King Indra to pick it up and fight. Vritrasura then spoke to King Indra as follows, instructing him very well. "The Supreme Personality of Godhead," he said, "is the cause of victory and defeat. Not knowing that the Supreme Lord is the cause of all causes, fools and rascals try to take credit for victory or defeat themselves, but everything is actually under the control of the Lord. No one but Him has any independence. The Purusha, the enjoyer, and Prakriti, the enjoyed, are under the control of the Lord, for it is by His supervision that everything works systematically. Not seeing the hand of the Supreme in every action, a fool considers himself the ruler and controller of everything. When one understands, however, that the real controller is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is freed from the relativities of the world, such as distress, happiness, fear, and impurity." Thus Indra and Vritrasura not only fought, but also engaged in philosophical discourses. Then they began to fight again. This time Indra was more powerful, and he severed Vritrasura's remaining arm. Vritrasura then assumed a gigantic form and swallowed King Indra. But Indra, being protected by the talisman known as Narayana Kavacha, was able to protect himself even within Vritrasura's body. Thus he emerged from Vritrasura's abdomen and severed the demon's head from his body with his powerful thunderbolt. Severing the demon's head took one complete year to accomplish. Okay, text 1. Sri Rishiruvacha. Evam jihaso nripadeham ajo. Mrityum param vijayan manyamanam. Shilam prigridya vyapatat surendram. Yatha mahapurusham kaitabhobsu. Evam jihaso nripadeham ajo. Mrityum param vijayan manyamanam. Shilam pagrivya vyapatat surendram. Yatha mahapurusham kaitabhobsu. Evam jihaso nripadeham ajo. Mrityum param vijayan manyamana. Shulam pagridya pyapatat surendram. Yatha mahapurusham kaitabhobsu. Evam jihaso nripadeham ajo. Mrityum vijayan manyamanah. Shulam pagridya vyapatat surendram. Yatha mahapurusham kaitabhobsu. Shri Shirvacha. Chalam pragriya pyapatat surindram. Yata mahapurusham kaita bhavsu. Evam jihasu nripadeham ajo. Vityum param vijayan manyamanha. Shulam pagriya pyapatat surindram. Yata mahapurusham kaita bhavsu. Shiri shivacha. Evam jihasu nripadeham ajo. Mrityam param vijayan manyamanha. Shulam priya pyapatat surindram. Yata mahapurusham kaita bhavsu. Any ladies, please? Okay. Sri Rishi Vacha. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, Evam, thus, Jihasu, very eager to give up. Nripa, O King Parikshit. Deham, the body. Ajo, in battle. Mrityum, death. Varam, better. Vijayat, then victory. Manyamana, thinking. Shulam, trident. Pragriha, taking up. Abhyapatat, attacked. Sura Indram, the king of heaven. Indra. Yata, just as. Mahapurusham, the supreme personality of Godhead. Kaitabha, the demon Kaitabha. Apsu, when the whole universe was inundated. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki, joy. Shukadeva Goswami said, desiring to give up his body, Dhritarasura considered death in the battle preferable to victory. O King Parikshit, he vigorously took up his trident and with great force attacked Lord Indra, the King of Heaven. Just as Kaitabha had forcefully attacked the Supreme Personality of Godhead when the universe was inundated. Purport. Although Dhritarasura repeatedly encouraged Indra to kill him with the thunderbolt, King Indra was morose at having to kill such a great devotee and was hesitant to throw it. Dhritarasura, disappointed that King Indra was reluctant despite his encouragement, took the initiative very forcefully by throwing his trident at Indra. Dhritarasura was not at all interested in victory. He was interested in being killed so that he could immediately return home, back to Godhead. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 9, Chaktvadeham Punar Janma Naiti. After giving up his body, a devotee immediately returns to Lord Krishna and never returns to accept another body. This was Dhritarasura's interest. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So first of all, I want to offer my respectful obeisances unto all the very senior devotees in the room who are much more qualified to speak about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur because of being, not just because of their devotional service, but because of being much more closer to him in the disciplic succession. Still, talking about a Mahabhagavat, just like talking about the Lord, is purifying for everyone, both for the speaker and for the listener. So it's their mercy upon me that they're allowing me to be purified in this way. And of course, obeisances unto Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whose position in our parampara and whose pivotal role he's played in giving us all the opportunity to become Krishna conscious is very important to understand. Which is why we're going to try to speak a little bit about him. With his blessings, hopefully we can all be inspired more. in Krishna's service. And slightly relevant to this verse and purport here about a life dedicated to service to the Lord. Here we're hearing about Vritrasura, who's actually interested in being killed because he wants to go back to Godhead. Sometimes the atheists, they make the remark, you weak-minded religious types, because of a fear of death, you've taken up this whole God business. And that's fair enough. Some people might become convinced by that. But actually we see that in the example of real devotees, not only is there not such a fear of death, but such conviction, such dedication to the service of the Lord, that they're willing to dedicate their entire lives. Under a fear of death, we'd act very miserly, that because death is coming imminently, I better enjoy as much as possible. This is actually the position of the materialists. But a devotee, because of such conviction, strong attachment for service to the Lord, dedicates everything without any fear of missing out on due sense gratification. And we hear about that in the life of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I thought today, because we only have so much time as well, I wanted to speak a little bit about not so much just the facts and figures of the Thakur's life, although it is important to know that he took birth on, he made his appearance on the 2nd of September, 1838, I believe, according to the Gregorian calendar. And that he is the father of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is Srila Prabhupada's guru, our Paramparam guru. And that he played a very pivotal role in saving Gaudiya Vaishnavism, or Lord Chaitanya's moot, from what was at the time, rampant manipulation and perversion of the philosophy and practice. So rampant that people were, under the guise of being devotees, doing all sorts of weird, illicit things. There were 12 particular apasampradayas, or these certain disciplic successions, you could call them, these little groups they'd form, with incredibly strange practices, like the bolas and the olas and the succubakis and all these sort of people, who would actually go up and dress like Radha and Krishna, and they'd go out to the middle of the forest and have sex, basically, and call this devotional service, somehow or other. That was very rampant. And also what's really important to consider is that the Thakur, he performed such a miraculous feat of saving Krishna consciousness within a context of British imperialism, when it was at its worst, actually. At the time, Britain, the English, they had really done well to take over India, not just in the sense that we hear about in other imperialist movements, like we know about the Nazis, they're taking over Germany, killing all the Jews and things like that. And more recent days, we hear about Somalia, all sorts of genocide going on here and there. And generally, this has been a trend throughout history, that one group considers themselves to be superior and takes over another by force. But the English were doing it at this time in India more in an intellectual sense. They looked at the Indian people and they thought, oh, they're very austere, and they're very regulated and very intelligent. But they have these really profane and wild and barbaric scriptures and practices and traditions, which are hellish and against the principles of Christianity. So rather than just slaughtering, why not destroy the intellectual culture of Vedic India? And this way they had systematically planned to get the prominent leaders of society at that time to admit that their own culture was really barbaric and backwards. It's not a secret anymore. It's quite open. And they made all sorts of plans in this regard. And lots of people were convinced of it. It was working in a very large degree. And because of this, the English, they set up all sorts of public schools to teach their own culture, their own traditions, and Christianity particularly, to, bright young Indian students. One of whom was Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and like Srila Prabhupada, all studied under English schools, and yet, because of their devotion, because of their unflinching attachment for service to the Lord, could not be swayed from that path of bhakti. And this is the important thing that I think we can all learn from the life of the Thakur, and something that's relevant to our own practice of Krishna consciousness is that we have to see examples of devotees whose dedication demonstrates that truthfulness always prevails, that devotion always prevails. It's not just a theory or a practice, but it's actually demonstrated by pure devotees like the Thakur. That even though there was such an incredible attempt being made to destroy the whole culture of India at that time, and even though certain persons were educated by those same imperialist overlords, still, bhakti is something superior that always prevails. And that's relevant to us because we're in a similar situation. We're in a similar situation where a prevalent culture of the time is crumbling. It's actually falling apart. America has had its reign as the dominant empire for a few hundred years, and it's falling apart. Just like at the time of the Thakur in India, there was the British reign, but it was falling apart. And certain persons, certain devotees could recognize that in any situation, devotional service has to be spread, has to be disseminated. And so the Thakur used all sorts of incredible, innovative techniques in order to do that. As we know, our disciplic succession is famous for this principle of yukta vairagya, using any sort of innovation in order to distribute Krishna consciousness. In fact, the Thakur got a lot of criticism in his time from other, leading Indian scholars, because he was working as a magistrate, as a supreme relevant relative to a Supreme Court judge in Orissa, working for the government in so many different facilities, and he would dress in the English style clothes of that time, which is still a very controversial issue even in our movement, and that he wouldn't always wear Kunti Mala and Tilak, and they said this person therefore is not qualified to speak on Vaishnavism. And yet the Thakur, of course, he naturally always spoke about Krishna, taught about Krishna, and so developed a very big following and lots of prominence in society at that time. And that's relevant to us as well, because they took complete advantage of the fact that people didn't want to be English. And they took complete advantage of the fact that they knew Krishna consciousness, devotional service, is the supreme paradigm, is actually the perfect culture. And so fearlessly, even at the threat of death several times, the Thakur continued to preach. Everyone's familiar with the famous story about how there is this one so-called yogi, this bogus yogi named Bhisakasena or something. Say again? Bhisakasena. Sorry, I can't pronounce the name right. Who had amassed some sort of following. I think it was in Orissa at the time. I can't remember. If I get all the details wrong, please excuse me. But there's this yogi who had this sort of mystic power in which there'd be like a fire and he'd be sitting next to it and he would lean into the fire like this. And then he would lean out and I guess fire would shoot from his head. And this way he convinced everyone that he's Vishnu. I don't remember which pastime in the Krishna book shows Krishna doing this. But anyway, simple people at the time were very enthusiastic about it. It's a trend in India, so I hear. Anybody's got some sort of trick. And America has their own, and England has their own magicians as well. Who's that guy? I can't remember now. Some angel guy. Yeah. He does all these tricks anyway. And so he convinced this Bhisakasena, convinced a lot of people that he was Vishnu. And he had these two persons with him, Brahma and Shiva. They didn't have any magic tricks, but it was just kind of self-evident. We're hanging out with Vishnu, so we must be Brahma and Shiva. Anyway, so a lot of people were really convinced. And it was causing a big stir, and this guy was making these claims that he's going to destroy the king of Orissa and he's going to take over because he's God and all this sort of stuff. And so the government, the English government at the time, deputed Bhaktivinoda Thakur to deal with him because he was like the Supreme Court judge and whatnot. He had all power over the police. And so the Thakur went to him one time and said to this bogus yogi, he said, "Oh, you're very wonderful and spiritual, and why don't you come over to Orissa and take darshan of Lord Jagannath?" Because the Thakur was going to arrest him. That's where his police department was. "Hey, why don't you come take darshan of Lord Jagannath? He's so beautiful." And this guy was so nasty. He's like, "Psh, I don't need to go see Jagannath, for he made some offensive statements. He said, I am Jagannath. I am that Supreme Lord. You should be coming to see me. But he said, but anyway, I know why you're here. And he said, I'll let you know. If you try to do anything, then I'll kill you. And so the Thakur said, okay, you're arrested. And he had all these men, and they grabbed him and whatnot, and they put him in jail. And there was a court case that went on for, I think, like 30 days or so long. And this person, he did actually have some mystic powers, and he was utilizing his mystic powers to try to destroy the Thakur's whole family. You know, at some point during the court case, one of the Thakur's daughters became deathly ill with this high fever. And then the Thakur himself became deathly ill with his high fever. You know, and at that time in India, it's like high fever is high risk of death, actually. It wasn't like you just pop a few aspirin. And a lot of people were telling him, hey, you should just let this guy go. You know, he's very powerful. He might kill you. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a very famous statement at the time. He said, if my whole family dies, that's fine. But this rascal will be punished. So it's pretty fearless confidence in service to the Lord. If we have to die for it, like we're hearing Vritrasura. I don't care, I'll dedicate my life to the cause of the service of the Lord. So he's very fearless in this way. At some point, they managed to cut off this yogi's hair. Somehow these yogis put all sorts of mystic powers in their dreadlocks or whatever. Which is why Josh wants to grow his dreadlocks back. But and because they cut off his hair, he became so ill that he practically died. They put him in jail, and then I think he took poison and killed himself and whatnot. And that was the end of our fake Vishnu. That was only one incident in which the Thakur's life was seriously threatened, but he unflinchingly stuck to his convictions, service to the Lord. There was actually another incident later when there was this particular king or some sort of government position, and he was Indian, of that area of Orissa, was misappropriating some funds which were meant for the Jagannath temple. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was also kind of like the president of the big Jagannath temple in Orissa, and he regulated everything so there was such nice service going on. And there's this one fellow, this king or some sort of political position, he was taking a little bit of the funds, and it was something like 80,000 rupees a year or whatever, and using it for his sense gratification. And the Thakur punished him. Somehow he wrote some legislation so that he had to sponsor or pay for 52 offerings to Lord Jagannath each day. I don't know if that's when the 52 offerings started, but suddenly he made some arrangements that this man had to start paying a lot of money back into Lord Jagannath's temple. And this fellow also became very disturbed by the Thakur's power and his influence, and knew that he was going to be a threat to our sense gratification. And so this man hired something like 30 pundits, or so-called pundits, and did this like special Kali Yajna puja in order to kill the Thakur. It was like 30 days of fire sacrifice. And then making all these offerings and chanting all these mantras. And at the end of the 30 days, it's supposed to kill, you know, whomever it was directed towards. I just read this yesterday in one of the biographies. And so they went on for 30 days, and this king was there, you know, was like really excited. Now I'm going to get the Thakur. He wasn't thinking Thakur, of course. Now I'm going to get him. And then the last day, they make the last offering, Swaha, and the king's own son died. Which is actually how a lot of these yajnas, or these tantric rituals work. That if it's directed at a pure devotee, you know, you can't expect defeat. You yourself will be destroyed. Like, you know, the term Iron Maiden? Not the band. But the more one's trying to embrace it, the more one's actually experiencing their own destruction. Similarly, the more that we're envious or malicious towards devotees, the more our own destruction comes about. And so, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was really famous for this, actually. That everyone knew he was so pure that it couldn't be destroyed. It's unflinching. And the perspective I was hoping to speak about just a little bit, I'm actually already wrapping up here, is that this is relevant to us because we're also in a situation where there's a predominant society or a whole paradigm of culture which is completely diametrically opposed to devotional service. There's a very materialistic, Darwinist-influenced, and perverted sort of culture that we're living in. And it's very hard just to practice Krishna consciousness. Or to speak of distribute it. It's very hard to overcome all that conditioning, all that influence that's in our mind, in our society, in our own families, in our own community. What to speak of distributing it to others? And we struggle because of that. It's a blissful struggle to distribute Krishna consciousness to others. And yet we can have a lot of confidence in the fact and in the example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his divine son, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and of course our own, Srila Prabhupada. That they're so confident that Krishna consciousness prevails, that actual truth prevails. It's not just a sentimental statement. They're so confident in it that regardless of the influence of that culture of the time, they had all that conviction. Similarly, we should have that conviction because now we're experiencing a time in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement where it seems like things are materially comfortable. And it seems like that culture is really well settled. And it's hard to break someone out of it, to break ourselves out of it, or to speak of someone else. It seems like it's been there forever, and it's going to be there forever. But from these examples, we can see that no, the history of material nature is, the material nature is always changing. And so what might be very unfavorable circumstances for Sankirtan now is soon to change and become very favorable. We saw that at the time of Srila Prabhupada, he came to America, of course, in the 70s, when people were so disturbed by all sorts of hypocrisy in government, as if there's not more now, and war in Vietnam, there's so much civil unrest. And he knew that this culture doesn't persist. It's not going to last. And so with full faith and conviction, he continued to distribute Krishna consciousness. Similarly, right now, we're in that circumstance. It seems like it's so difficult, but we have to be very confident in the fact that it's going to change. And so we should be prepared now. That's how an intelligent devotee perceives Sankirtan. Yajnaya Sankirtana Prayaya Yajantihi Sumedasa. It takes a lot of intelligence. That now is a wonderful time to be sharpening our skills, to be developing a very stable and lasting community, because in the very near future, the sort of society we live in can seriously crumble, become drastically changed. And people are going to be looking for shelter. Are we going to be prepared to provide it? Just like at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gandhi started his non-violence movement. The whole society was changing in India. But the Thakur, particularly Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, was prepared to give people direction, to give people shelter and guidance in a time when there was so much civil unrest, social unease. Are we prepared to do the same thing? We see that in America, economies are crashing. All around the world, economies are crashing. Environmental resources are depleting. People are becoming more and more disturbed. It's becoming more and more evident that it's probably not going to last, even throughout our lifetime. But to speak of the next lifetime. But to speak of our children, our children's children. So are we prepared to give the same shelter to people? Are we prepared to have that conviction that, yes, this is going to be stable? This is going to last. Krishna consciousness is real. That's the conviction that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had, despite threats on his life, despite such political upheaval, despite the oppressive regime of the British Raj. And that's something I think that we can really meditate on today as another perspective of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life. An example of a Mahabhagavat, someone who's so dedicated, so conviction. Not only is he not afraid of death, but is willing to give his whole life for that service. And so we have to end, of course, with that famous quip from the Thakur's poem. Not that I know the whole poem, but there's the one verse that, of course, we always quote, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote, that he reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die while thou art living still and sound. How does it go? Vaishnavas die to live, and in living spread the holy name around. This is the conviction that we need to meditate on in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and what we're hearing as well in this verse about Vitrasura. Vaishnava dies to live, and in living tries to spread the holy names around. Are we ready to give our whole lives to the service of the Lord? Do we have that same conviction? If not, then today is a good day to hear about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And see that it's possible. not only is it possible in the very near future, it's going to be absolutely necessary when this material society is crumbling. So that's one perspective I was hoping to be able to share with all the Purus. I'm sure a lot more of the senior Vaishnavas here could say something else about the Thakur's life if they wanted. Or if there are any questions or comments, please. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, you were mentioning about it, that we have to be prepared. So, can you mention that this tour freedom in the top line, that you can think of how you can maintain the quality of that vibration?
There can be many, many. You can make a big list, but if you can summarize, can you make three? Or what will be the top on the list?
And you I don't think I'm qualified prepared. To answer that question. To be totally
if you can be prepared, oh, maybe somebody else can answer it.
I'm sure Archita Prabhu or Brigapati Prabhu or some of the devotees who have serious vision about the direction of our ISKCON movement could give some insight into that. I'm just a young gun, so.
Just follow Prabhupada's directives. If we can't expand, maintain. And preaching is very simple. Book distribution, prasadam distribution, harinam. That's it. We don't have to be creative and geniuses and come up with this and that. You know, purity is the force. But sometimes we don't like to hear that. You know, I was invited to some meeting of planning for ISKCON's future and this and that. And I just, that was my humble statement. That if you want ISKCON to expand, then the leaders especially have to concentrate on being pure. Purity is the force. But we're always looking for some magic formula. You know, if we rearrange this, and if we do that, and we innovate this, and innovate that, then no. And Prabhupada showed it himself. What did he bring? Kartals and Bhagavatams. Sat down and chanted. So we just need to do that. And following Prabhupada's directions, many of his disciples did that. He sent his devotees all over the world. And that's what they did. Right here in America, Vishwajana was famous. He went to Austin, Texas, sat down, chanted Hare Krishna. He didn't even have any place to stay. He stayed overnight with some student or something, sat down, chanted, and within a few days he was attracting young people, and then very soon they had a center in Austin. So we just have to follow that formula. We don't have to rack our brains to come up with new ways and this and that. Just follow the formula that's given. And then whatever innovation is required, Krishna will inspire from within. But if we stick to the tried and true formula, and that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur envisioned, that he's waiting for that happy day when the Russians, the Americans, everybody would come to Mayapur and chant, not sit down and cogitate about this and that. And his vision was they would come from around the world and sit down in Mayapur and chant to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's satisfaction. So that's basically all we need to do.
Chai. Brigapati Prabhu, you wanted to add something there?
When you when you're on the stage and it's your turn to perform, it's not the time to try to rehearse new material. So, you know, when society's falling apart and people are coming to us for guidance, for shelter, we have to just tell them what we've been practicing ourselves now for, you know, X number of years, depending upon how long we've been here. Chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, and, you know, when they become fixed in that, Harinam and book distribution. That's what we're doing here. That's what this is really, just exactly the activities we're performing here now are the exact same things we should tell them. This is what's important. This is what life's really all about. And just give them the straight philosophy and introduce them to the exact same things that we're practicing in our, you know, daily lives. That's the way we can, practically speaking, help people. We're not like, we're not a farm, you know, we're not a rural community or something like that. We're not going to be able to really help people, you know, learn about cow protection or something like that. We're not really equipped for that. We could tell them about it, but practically speaking, what we have to offer them is just, you know, the straight sadhana bhakti, the philosophy, and introduce them to basic sadhana bhakti. And that's significant. If we could, you know, plug them into that, they've been benefited, they've been helped.
Thank you, Prabhu. Any other comments on that subject? Okay. Grantharat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Satchitananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur Ki Jai, Gaur Premanandi.